A warm welcome to the 47th episode of the Learn Explorer podcast. This time I discuss the impact of AI and generative AI on learning and development together with Malu Kingan from the Han University. We explore the potential, take a look at areas of application and tasks where it can be used, as well as the limitations and risks involved in using these new technologies. Let's start the interview. Hi, Malu. Nice that you are here today in the Learn Explorer podcast. For the listeners who don't know you yet, do you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for the invitation. My name is Malu Kingan. I am a senior lecturer at Han University of Applied Sciences in the Netherlands. And in our university, we have a bachelor program on learning and development, focusing on three roles: learning design, learning consultancy, and training and coaching, both for part-time and full-time students. And next to teaching, I do coach students in their final projects. I'm also responsible for curriculum development and innovation. And overall, I would say I'm just a curious L&D professional. So I write and speak about a variety of topics like personalized learning, learning analytics. I also co-authored a book on procurement for learning and development. And on a personal level, I'm married. I have two daughters of 17 and 19 years old. And I live in Wijchen, which is close to Nijmegen and also very close to Germany.
Okay, thank you very much. Quite interesting. And I like the way you say it, that you are a curious L&D professional. I think this also fits nicely to the podcast name, because I'm trying to explore learning as well in the podcast here. Very nice.
Yeah, that's so we have that in common, because I use writing and interviewing people as well to get into new topics.
Very nice. And have you also brought a quote for us?
Yeah, just when I got your invite with also the question on a quote, I saw a quote that made me smile and I thought I'll take that one. Mm-hmm. I can't remember whose it is, to be honest, but it said, it's on AI. It said, I want AI to do my laundry and dishes so that I can do art and writing. Not for AI to do my art and writing so that I can do my laundry and dishes. So we have a video connection now, so I can see you're smiling as well, Matthias. So I had the same smile, I guess. We like to make things.
Exactly. I saw this quote also before. And yeah, exactly. And if generative AI is stealing away the creativity part and leaves us with the dishwashing, maybe it's also not my my target, my personal one. Yeah,
right.
Very nice. And this also already touches up on the topic we like to discuss today, right? So we want to explore a little bit AI in L&D. And I saw a nice post from you. And maybe you first tell us a little bit about what your connection with AI and L&D is.
Yeah, for me, the connection is that, well, like anyone in L&D, I guess, I was wondering how AI is going to impact our profession. I think no matter if you're very much into tech or not, everyone is asking this question. And for me, this question was specifically important. As I told you, I'm also responsible for the curriculum of L&D in our bachelor program. And we want to have a current and up-to-date curriculum, and also give our students the skills to be successful in their work right now, but also for the future. So over the last couple of months, I did some desk research. I interviewed some people. I also did some focus groups related to skills. So I wanted to find out what is really going on, because I'm reading a lot, I'm on LinkedIn a lot, so I see all kind of use cases and examples and predictions, and I wanted to find the red thread in that. So that's the post that you found on LinkedIn as well. And for me, primarily, I did this to get a good insight for our curriculum, but at the same time, it gives an overview for L&D professionals as well of what is going on in the profession.
Yeah. In a few words, how would you describe what is really going on in the AI space?
If you look at the if I look at my research, I can conclude that AI is relevant and is already used in every aspect of our profession, because from the desk research I found applications of generative AI in every aspect of our work, anything from designing, but also in training and coaching, in measuring impact, in performance support. It's in every aspect of our work. So that's actually the main conclusion, I would say. And in practice, I would say there is a lot of variety of what people do. So as far as adoption, I think it's anything from, well, I really need to get into that, to people who already use generative AI as daily habit, very well integrated in their daily work, and well, doing more advanced stuff with it. Yeah.
Very nice. I also think it's right that it can touch and is already partly touching all aspects of L&D most probably, and can be leveraged everywhere, but the adoption is most probably different in different areas. What surprised you the most when you did the desk research and the interviews?
What surprised me the most? I have to think about that. Well, actually, maybe the use in training and coaching. I just hadn't thought about that beforehand. So the examples from like learning design, but media creation and outlining programs, that was obvious for me. But then the opportunities it brings for training and coaching, that was quite new to me. And another surprising thing I found was that from this desk research, I used 54 sources, and I got 370 applications of AI in L&D work. But only one mentioned selecting the right solution. So that I found really surprising, and maybe also a bit worrying.
So with selection the right solution, you mean what?
The right learning solution. So it sounds like, from the examples I found, it feels like we're jumping to solutions too quickly. Or once we've, and even if we do a good analysis beforehand, it sounds like we just go into make a design, a program design. But I didn't find, well, I found only one example of using AI to think about what would be the right solution in this case. So do we need to go performance support, or do we make an e-learning, or does it require live training or mentoring? This choice was like absent in the sources that I studied.
Wow. Interesting. So I would say definitely finding out more about the target audience, like creating a persona and so on, is something where generative AI can be really helpful, and also for the brainstorming part, which is already a part of making the right choice. Personally, I would also tend to do the choice on my own, I think, but I think it can definitely help to make the right choices.
Exactly. Especially, you were also mentioning that use AI as a brainstorming tool. So why not use it as a brainstorming tool as well, to find out what the pros and cons of certain learning solutions are?
Definitely.
It's very tempting to just go and make a learning design, especially since, you know, you can do it faster and maybe easier with AI. But, you know, a very deliberate choice before you jump into the design That's something that I find very important.
Yeah, and you can even ask it what are the relevant questions, what questions should I try to get answered, and so on. Yeah, and yeah. It can definitely help in the early stages as well, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Very nice, yeah. And you were also surprised in the area of using it in training and coaching. Do you like to elaborate a little bit on what are use cases there?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was surprised just because I didn't think of it. It was just a little bit out of my scope, I guess. Many examples and use cases are on, say, preparing role plays and cases for training. So in the preparation phase, practicing conversations and role plays. And I must say, I did this, say, end of 2023, early 2024. And I would think if I would do this same research again, I would find more on that, since AI is evolving, of course, and voice options grow. So I think that practicing conversations will get bigger, but also interventions in training and coaching to ensure the transfer of knowledge. So using like a chatbot for people to continue to practice, or having a kind of assistant or tool that summarizes that everything that has been covered in a training. And especially that one, I find it could be really powerful.
Yeah, definitely. And I also have in the training area just experienced one example. It's even including VR, where I was either in, for example, a job interview where I could practice this, and the other one was a difficult conversation. So where I had an employee where she was very had very high performance before. Suddenly it's decreasing, and I should talk about it with her. And then I started talking with her, and she basically said, "Yeah, but my colleague, don't know the name, he's better paid than me. He's working less than me, and this is completely unfair. I'm totally overloaded with work, and he's always going home early. And I won't do this anymore like this. And what are your solutions?" And this was it's not my typical situation, let's say, at work. And it was a very nice experience to do this in a very, very safe setting. So in a role play, it's different. Okay, you don't see the face and so on. But this was really, really something like feeling authentic and being then in the situation, quite immersive, I would say. It was not yet with what GPT-4o is possible of doing, where you have a real conversation. It was still a little bit delayed, but it was very good. Quite interesting.
Yeah, and like you're saying, I think things will evolve very quickly in this area. It will become more and more natural and real life. And I think also the big advantage is that you can get very specific feedback. And also the feedback, I guess, will improve as well. How are you doing? What type of questions did you ask? How much did you talk? How much did the other one talk? So all this stuff, are you reassuring? Are you more confrontational? I think that's also a really interesting development.
And it gives you the opportunity to also get some good feedback, or maybe not the same as from a professional coach, but still giving it available to more people and easier to access. I also did a presentation in one tool at a fair that was recently, and also in VR, and held a short presentation in front of a group, and it taught me about my how fast my speech is, what filling words or repeating words I used, and so on. So it was quite interesting to see all this analysis about what I was saying, where again, a coach would do it differently, most probably more targeted, but still it's maybe a good tool for giving it away to more people. And I think quite interesting development area.
Yeah, and I think it would also be interesting to see how those two could work together. So, yeah. Like you have your analysis from an AI tool,
yeah.
And maybe this helps you to see where you want to develop more. And maybe then you turn to a professional coach for like life coaching or life mentoring training and develop there and maybe then work again with an AI tool to practice again. So I think that would be an interesting option to see how can we combine those two and what do you use the life coaching for and where do you use AI coaching?
And maybe also stagger it and build it up in each other so that people can already have a certain level until they're good to a real coach and so on. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think these are quite impressive things. On the other hand, side, you also mentioned the design part, the like creating case studies or role play elements. Mm-hmm. Also, what other typical elements or activities have you found in your research?
Well, in the training design
design
area.
I think this is easier for most people.
Exactly. I think was the number one in the desk research that I did is anything related to content and media creation.
Yeah.
So anything from, say, making images, creating images, and rewriting maybe manuals or text from subject matter expert, maybe rewriting text on different language levels, preparing program design in general, learning objectives. So this was actually the number one area that I found that people already use already now most in AI. Yeah. And then I think... you still have to be critical on what you design because you know the models are trained with certain learning designs, and maybe if you want to be very creative or innovative, you still need to be thinking yourself a lot. But it can give you some good ideas, and it can definitely speed up the process as well. But I think it's also interesting bit with all the content and media creation, how can you use that to make the learning better? So not just make content faster, but also make it better. And better could also be, if you work in an international environment, the option to easily translate your learning materials into many languages, which is an advantage, obviously. You know, we're talking English, it's not our native language.
Yeah.
If you have many languages in your company, I think it can make learning more accessible for people by doing so.
Yeah, the accessible part is very good. You can even have images getting well explained by AI often people at in web creation and so on, they put in the images without thinking about people could be maybe visually impaired and not able to see the image in detail, but then they can get the opportunity to get real explanations about what is shown in the image. This is good. But what I really like a lot is make it better, not faster.
Yeah.
Maybe also faster, but so make it better and not more and faster. Yeah.
Exactly, because I work in a university, so it's not like everything is high speed, as in many companies. Or I'm not in an L&D department with limited resources and high demand, so it's very easy to say that maybe for me. But I think it's really this is the challenge to not just make more content or faster content, but make it also use it to make it better. Because if you fall in the trap of making faster content, I think it is not that good for you as an L&D department, because you will be the order taker or like the the training shop that you maybe don't want to be if you really want to contribute to the business.
It reminds me like some many years back when e-learning was very popular or starting to get popular, where first companies said, there's no problem creating e-learning. You simply can convert any PowerPoint to a ClickNext e-learning that has nothing to do with learning. So unfortunately, this was not part of their slogan, but
exactly.
But this was the typical thing, like no one thinking about the learner, just making it more efficient and very fast, but it was simply scrap learning. One of my guests once said, and with generative AI, it looks maybe nicer. Maybe there are more options. With just one very short one-line prompt, I can create a complete 5-minute video with the talking head and so on. But if you don't think about what should be in and what is really the benefit of it, it's just more content that is not providing any value.
So this is, exactly, and it will be that generic that you can also wonder, do I have to make it? Because there are probably plenty of videos explaining the same concept or telling the same thing available already. So, I think that's a trap that we can easily fall in. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then having the right measures in place to mitigate this and at least, maybe investing the time we save while creating the content, thinking more about what is the right solution, what's the right learning solution, how does it look, should it look like, and what will really do a benefit for the learner and make the learning more accessible. I don't like to say more easier, because if learning is too easy, maybe it's not helping too much to learn, but maybe also making it easier. So I understood. So one risk is definitely that we get flooded with even more learning content when even more learning creation tools get available, that with just one click create new contents. Where would you see other limitations or challenges?
I think another thing to be aware of is that we are using new technology in our existing or old processes. And you were already mentioning the example of e-learning. And to some extent, you could say maybe we're doing the same thing right now. Because when e-learning was like new, we were putting up PowerPoints, or maybe even worse, 100 pages of guides with lots of text into e-learnings, and it didn't work. And over time, we found models to find out what effective e-learning looks like. But right now, I'm not sure if we know what effective, say, chatbots for learning look like. So I think we're still figuring out. We need to be aware of that we are doing stuff in new technology, but we're using old processes, and we may not have like the knowledge or models. So I think that's a limitation that we have, and it doesn't mean that what we're doing is bad or not effective. But I think we are still trying out how to be more effective with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the... I think in business, sometimes you say regarding digital transformation, you can digitize a process and say it's the same process, but just on IT and running on digital devices. This is not digital transformation. This is, in worst case, same old crappy process, just digitized. Like want to send a normal letter and you print out at home the stamps. Yeah, this would be still the same as before. You just don't go to the post office to buy stamps, right? And digital transformation would be something different and completely recreating the process. So for learning, it would mean something like I think more people need to learn how to do Python programming, for example, and I create, assisted with AI, a very nice learning program, online training, whatever, or live training. And this would be the old way, but the new way would be, I had a colleague who recently wanted to learn Python programming, and he simply opened ChatGPT, put in, "You are my Python tutor, and I want to learn programming. Now is lesson one. What do I have to do?" Right? Maybe the prompt was more advanced or not the best. However, it worked out, right? Like this, over time, he learned some programming, and this was then maybe more going into the digital transformation way. So rethinking completely the way it's working. Or the virtual reality example I had before would also be a more modern way, most probably. It would still be a role play. Maybe even more advanced would be observing our conversation, giving me later on feedback on how to become a better podcast host, for example, right? This would be maybe the next steps, and it would be really learning in the flow of work, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also more information-driven or data-driven, because you could ask people to review this podcast and tell us what they think, or maybe in a structured way, so give scores on the quality of the conversation, the way we talked, well, anything you want to know. But then with AI, it gives you more objective data, not just what people notice, but anything that happens. So I think that's another approach, and that's also could be part of a transformation in L&D. Maybe not for everything, because I think data are not like the holy grail, but this is a different approach for many L&D departments, to really use data that are available in the company in general, or L&D specific data, to see what is needed in learning, what resources, what experience you need to provide. So that will also be a transformation for L&D departments, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And you said, on one hand side, it would be more objective data. On the other hand side, I just wondered, but then potentially the emotional part is missing. So maybe people like the podcast because it's not well structured. I don't know, right? There are some podcasts out there. So I am trying always to look at content a little bit because I like it. And I just look way more at the personal level and have way more personal conversations where objectively you could say, but there's not much content in. But this is exactly maybe what the guests are liking. So this part could be more difficult maybe for the machines. Maybe this is also working, don't know. On the other hand side, people in direct conversations usually tend to be kind and positive and maybe also are afraid to provide candid feedback. So it's it's maybe something where the machine has an easier way of telling you, this was not good, say you have to really improve, because it's not personal anymore.
Exactly, and I think we were talking about combining life coaching and AI coaching, and I think the same could go here, because you have objective data and you have the subjective experience, and what if you combine those two? That will give a more rich analysis, I guess. Yeah.
So it's basically then always trying to better augment human and AI capabilities. And this is also why the name, for example, from Microsoft calls all their tools Copilot, because you should not let Gen AI fly on its own, but it's a good assistant to help you become a better pilot.
Exactly.
Most probably. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, and that way the name is chosen very well.
Do you know of any good real life examples that you could talk about or share about where that was applied?
We did mention already some, I guess. I would say I see many companies investing in their own GPT development. So as an L&D professional, I would translate that into performance support solutions. So what if we combine everything that we have in our company, all the reports, all the guides, e-learnings, and name it, and combine it into one model and build an assistant around it, or a chatbot. And a chatbot sounds, you know, very text-based, but I guess over time it will also give a richer variety in media. Like, it could be text, but it could also generate images. And I think there is a lot to gain there. And like, I've already heard about examples for onboarding, for example. So especially as you're new in a company, where do I find all the information? I have colleagues that I can ask, but I don't want to ask all the time. So what I have an assistant just, you know, can help me with everything, like where can I find certain stuff? Oh, how do I get a card for the to get in the building? You know, anything actually. So onboarding is one. And I think just also you were mentioning learning in the flow of work, also having this information available on the spot is interesting as well. One of the person I talked to in my interviews also was also building chatbots for people in customer service. So normally they would have to browse documents, SharePoint sites, everything, but what if they can have, you know, 80% of the questions just from a chatbot or assistant.
Agree. Especially in this area, there's a lot of information that they have to access, and AI can really very nicely help them to find good answers.
We were also already talking about e-learning in different languages and stuff like that. But I must say, last year, a group of our students also had a nice example. I was really surprised by it. They were building an e-learning, creating an e-learning for a local company who also works in clean rooms. And they needed images of things not to do in a clean room. Well, this is hard, of course. This is either unsafe or very costly. So they used AI to create images of these situations not to do, things not to do in a clean room. And I found they did a really good job. And it was also nice because it was not specifically the assignment, but they just decided to do it because they thought it was a good idea.
Very good. And doing real photos of things you should not do in a clean room, in the clean room, could be leading to things you don't want to have happening, or have to build an artificial clean room and so on. Quite expensive. Difficult. And I can imagine that Gen AI is really, really helpful there. And I also always on what stock photo provider you have, but finding good stock photos that's not used before is not easy. And sometimes creation can be faster, but sometimes also looks very similar. Especially if you are not using very good, not very advanced prompts, or the DALL-E models, for example, it's sometimes people look the same and so on.
And I guess also in the analysis that we do in L&D, especially in the analysis of qualitative data, I think AI can be a good friend of all of us as L&D, because it makes it easy to process, and I think we can get richer analysis. Maybe some analysis that we maybe don't do that much because we think it's in the past it was really hard to process everything. Or maybe you have a lot of qualitative data that you didn't use before and now you can use. So, and that could give you more insight as well. I was thinking also about, I'm not sure if you're aware of like the critical incident method that you can use to see what do good performers do in a certain job. And normally this is quite a time-consuming exercise because you need these to get these good performers on board and let them talk about how they do their work. But what if people do a lot of virtual work and online work and you could let AI do the analysis of what do these good performers actually do? How do they interact with their customers? How do they plan their day? It could be anything, actually. And that could give some really interesting input on what to train other people in.
Okay, so really, really crunching all the data or information that's potentially available, like to get more insights about what's the right things to do.
Does a good performer do? This is actually, I think, what many people want to know, and maybe managers, but I guess as L&D, you also want to know, what does someone who does this job really well, what does he or she do? What if we could use AI to get a grip on that as well?
Yeah, interesting. Just wondering if it could give you the wrong track and the wrong impression, because maybe all the high performers do something that is very observable, but it's not really making the difference. And maybe the hidden things
exactly
are making the difference. But this is still.
It could be interesting to, again, maybe here, if you have all these data and there is an analysis made by AI, then it's interesting to talk with people and discuss this data and see what is the secret sauce, so to say. What does make the difference? In we see that the high-performing employees do this and the others don't do it, but out of this list or this task or the way of working, what is it that does make the difference in your opinion? That's where the human element gets in again.
And before, you were only able to do this for very structured data. With typical normal machine learning, you always needed a data scientist most probably, and now more is possible, way more is possible also with generative AI most probably. Very nice. Looking at what does this mean for me personally working in L&D or for leaders of L&D departments? So what should I do personally so to get more exposed to this, to get it going? And you said some people are still thinking, this could be interesting when I have time. So on the 0%, and others are already having a habit of using it every day. What are first steps? What would you recommend people?
Yeah, I think maybe even before the first step, I think being curious and wanting to experiment, actually having a learning mindset, I would say. I think this is a crucial skill because many people in L&D didn't get into L&D because they like technology. They like to work with people. So this is something that maybe plays a role here as well. But if you have this learning mindset and just go and try it, I think that's actually the first step. In general, I would think if you're not really into technology, just start small. Like in my university, we have very strict privacy regulations, so we do work with Copilot. I cannot work with many other tools officially on my computer. But still, you know, go try and experiment with it for a specific task. Also, I would say, and we can talk about that later, also follow some people on LinkedIn that you find interesting and you have the feeling that you can learn from what they are doing. But it does, it for some people it goes natural, and for some people it will require some, you know, some learning. And we're in learning, so that shouldn't be a problem. I did do some research also on skills that you use in AI for AI as an L&D professional. And I think I found two kind of tools, actually, two type of skills, actually, from specific skill profiles on AI and also on, say, data literacy and information literacy in general. You get skills like understanding the technology, information and data literacy, and stuff like that. So those are maybe the ones that you would expect. Mm. And there's some more, but I won't list them all. But on the other hand, when I did focus groups and asked people to share experiences on AI, some very advanced and some very beginning, early experiences, then most of what people say is having this learning mindset, but also learn to be a critical thinker. Mm. And I think critical thinking is a very important skill as well. But also, it seems that the importance of having domain knowledge, so L&D knowledge, is getting more important than it maybe was or seemed to be before AI. And also creativity. So they're like more technical skills, I would say, like understanding the technology, data literacy. But on the other hand, very generic skills like this learning mindset and critical thinking.
Yeah, very, very good. So I also think that for many people who are still not exploring it, I think for them it's also important to have get the awareness level of what is really possible, so get the experience, get the wow moment for some elements, and this is quite important. And you touched upon many important skills, and the domain knowledge, I think it's very important in two ways from my perspective, because on one hand side, if you are not experienced in L&D or not that deep in L&D, then most probably the tools will reach a similar level or have a similar level than you. So it's not as good. On the other hand side, often you have to write prompts, instructions for the AI tools, right? And if you can guide it based on your domain knowledge, like, now doing analysis of what are the learning goals, use Bloom's taxonomy, if it's good or not, we can discuss, but giving this explicit instruction or maybe giving away some information on how this should look like can lead to way better results. So if you, I had recently a talk with someone who really deconstructed basically the learning approach to learn something new into 5, 6, 7 different steps and said, hey, I want to learn this. And first do this. What are the skills needed? How would you describe the skill levels? What skill levels is relevant for me? And so on. And it's really made very small steps out of it where he could instruct the AI very explicitly for every single step, and then the interim elements were higher quality, leading then to very good end result. Most probably, so I haven't seen the result, but this way of thinking is really helpful. Or I saw a post from someone who is writing professionally, and he said, hey, when I write a blog post, for example, I have 5 or 7 different roles that I give into my prompt and saying, hey, you are just finalizing the final draft and do some wordsmithing maybe, and then you are the lecturer and so on. So giving them really the real roles and explicitly saying what to do and not saying, please improve my text so it's better.
Yeah, and exactly, because from your examples, it shows that these people do use their expertise in the way they prompts and the way they talk actually or chat with the systems. And they are also able to review the outputs. And both are very critical. So it's in both ways. It's reviewing what the system gives you, but it's also being able to guide the system actually and get to better results.
Very good. So this is what individuals should do. So think about the skills that they need and be curious, definitely. And if I would be heading a L&D department, what would be my task from your point of view?
Yeah, this is a difficult one, of course, because I think at first you need to kind of step back on and see what kind of L&D department do we want to be? And what does our company expect us to do? And then see how AI can help you achieve that. So maybe not jump into, you know, all the tooling that is available. Every day there is a new tool. And so first think about what you want to achieve and then see how AI can help you with that. And maybe this is as an individual, but also as a department, I would just say go and try. And depending on if how much support you get and how good your network in your own organization is, you can decide to start really small. Just do a little experiment maybe for yourself. And not maybe make it into a real big project. Just go and try a little bit to get acquainted with it. I would say if you know that there are big projects going on in your company, then see how can you leverage from that. How can you be in those projects as well to really make a difference there, and also at the same time learn from the expertise from other people in your company. Because they're also in communications, also in AI, in all these areas, people are also trying to figure out how to get the best out of AI and how to use it for the better. So if you can work along these people, I think that is also really useful.
So basically find also the other curious people in the organization.
Exactly, and of course also look at your skill level, you know, apart from being curious and being able and willing to experiment and make mistakes, how information and data literacy as a team, and do we want everyone to have a certain level of expertise, or do we like have a couple of people who really dive into the topic and then share with others? So those are all choices to make, I would say. And I know Stella Lee does some great work on skill sets, also to be used, I guess, in teams to see what is the level of the level that we want in our team.
Interesting. Good. And I also hear, I haven't heard much about tools. So it sounds also like your opinion is also similar to mine. I think it's not about finding the right tools often, but it's around finding out what's possible first, right?
Because I would say, as far as tooling, I would not be your perfect podcast guest, because then I'm also not that much into tooling. I do follow it. I do experiment a little bit. But if I would really have a big project, I would also just go and ask other people about their experiences with tooling and just go and try it then. I think it's also a matter for everyone to just accept that it's really hard to keep up with all the developments. So it's kind of just accept that you won't be up to date all the time in every aspect of it. So find your own like niche or the thing that is important for you, and then work from that.
Yeah.
No fear of missing out.
No, and yeah, exactly what you said. And every podcast I would record on AI tools would be outdated as soon as I publish it, most probably.
Exactly.
There are people who are looking at tools basically every day. Most probably, they are better people to follow. And there's a web page that I've seen that's called "There's an AI for This." Most probably, you find a lot there. I also saw a collection of L&D AI tools, but all of these lists are not complete usually. So it's always depending on what's your specific need, and you can already do lots without special tools like this ChatGPT, this Copilot. You can already do a lot, most probably.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the people that I interviewed said the same. And maybe you, as an IT professional, also recognize that now you see that there are many tools for specific tasks. Mm. And on the longer run, all these specific tools will be incorporated in other systems. And maybe those systems are the ones that you already have in your company. So on the longer run, you will probably need as much tools as you do now.
Mm. It's like in the iPhone. So in the first iPhones, you had a special app to install for having a torchlight or having an alarm clock and so on. I don't know exactly if in iPhone, or at least in Android. And nowadays, these basic functionalities are already always built in, or they acquired the best suppliers for it or whatever. Right?
Yeah, so exactly.
Something you don't need especially anymore. Or most probably some larger companies will be then the ones covering most of the needs. Let's see if this is also true for the L&D market. But also the idea of having then a real life conversation, which with the VR examples that I had, looking at ChatGPT 4.0 and the chat abilities or the voice abilities that it basically already has, but it's, I think, not yet completely published, is already very impressive. And with the right prompt, you can already do a lot of these, like, do a job interview with me and it will start basically doing this, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. You said before, there are some people also that you would recommend potentially to follow on LinkedIn also to get up to date or good information.
Yeah. There are many lists already also out there, but some people that I follow that I also found really useful to get this overview. One is maybe obvious, Donald Taylor. Mm-hmm. He does some great research on AI as well, together with Egil Vinashkanti. I hope I pronounce her name correctly. It's to me, it's not a common name. Mm-hmm. But they give great overview, and also he has a great network and shares interesting stuff on that as well. I already mentioned Stella Lee with a skills framework for AI and L&D. Yeah. Then I really like the work by Philippa Hartmann, especially on learning design. And then let me think. Detlef Holt, he's from Roche. He also had some really nice LinkedIn updates sharing different sources. So he's a good collector of information, I would say, as well. And then there are some people with some nice podcasts as well, like Cambria Dumesnil. Also a name I'm not really sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. And then a podcast like The Learning Hack, which is on different topics, but also AI. I think some of the people I just mentioned have already been there as a guest. And I would say if you're quite new to AI in learning, Donald Clark wrote a book on artificial intelligence for learning back in 2020, which seems an age ago maybe in AI, but it's still relevant. So it's a really good book to get also to know the backgrounds of AI and also the opportunities. So Donald Clark is also definitely one to follow. And then, well, maybe in a German podcast in English, it may be weird, but there is a very nice Dutch book. So maybe for a very rare Dutch-speaking listener, I would say there is a specific book on AI and learning called Beter, Leuker, Sneller, meaning better, more fun, and faster. And it really gives you some hands-on well, ways of working with AI and also some use cases. So, well, those authors are also interesting to follow. I would say Ilona Boomsma, Jean-Luc Laval, and also Barend Last. So, well, I could go on, and probably you have a list as well. Like, so I'm interesting to hear about who you are following on this as well.
Oh, I don't know. Really, so I know Ethan Molnick, I think it's his name. He's also writing a lot about it, but it's way more than what I can really follow. And I'm very interested in the topic, but it's not my core topic. So just try to stay informed. But I definitely know that Donald Clark is one of the people to follow. And I knew now he wrote this book. Unfortunately, I haven't read it yet, but I also look into the technology independently from L&D sometimes, so that I at least know how the technology works and how to leverage it in various areas. But very, very, very interesting, good list, I think. I will try to find the names and put them in the show notes. Okay, looking a little bit at the time, any important thing that I should have asked you about topics that I have missed?
I think we've covered most of it. Well, I just hope that everyone feels free to go and experiment if they're not yet doing so. And at the same time, stay critical on what the added value is and where you need these and where you can leverage AI's expertise, I would say. And maybe also don't be set back if things do not work out as good as you think, because the developments go that fast that maybe if you're disappointed by an outcome of ChatGPT, your co-pilot, now maybe if you would ask the same question or have the same approach in a couple of months, you will get a terrific outcome. So even if you're not really into IT, just go and follow it and have a look at some examples and then see what triggers you positively and where you think it can add value for you.
Very good. And you also mentioned it's not always working, be careful, but and also finding out where it's not adding yet value is also, I think, an important element. Microsoft Copilot, I think, has a lot of potential. When I tried it first, it showed more that it will have potential and was not yet there. Like in some areas, at least, like I wanted to create one slide just on a certain topic, and this was not working as well as creating a complete presentation, which you not always need. And then I tried to prompt around like for 1 or 2 hours and thought about, in 30 minutes, I could have done it manually on my own, right? So this is also part of the learning.
And this is also part of the learning. It's experimenting. It's also things go wrong or doesn't work as you thought it would. But next time, maybe you find a different approach. So and then it will work.
Yeah, exactly. Now looking at the end, so we have here a podcast on learning and on continuous learning. You also said stay curious. What's on your personal to learn list? So what are you currently learning?
Well, I'm still, I think my learning is in this area. Mm-hmm. Like I said, there's so much going on that it's hard to keep up. And for me, I think also as someone who teaches students on LMD, I think my learning for the next year is also how to work with students and AI. Mm-hmm. Because, I've seen in my research that every aspect of our profession is impacted by AI, so I will start to use more AI in my classes. Mm. But I'm not yet sure how. So this is definitely my learning for next year.
Oh yeah.
So say from September, I think I will go and start teach a class on impact, on measuring mm-hmm. impact of learning.
Oh, cool.
And students will normally make, evaluation form, that's mm-hmm. one part, but they will also make like an assessment in an e-learning that they develop. But now this was all done, say, manually,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that students will go to Copilot yeah. chat or any tool to find assessment questions.
Yeah.
So I need to learn how to work along with them to learn them how to make a good assessment with the assistance of AI.
Yeah.
So yeah. this is my learning for the next year. And I guess it will be on my list for quite some time because things yeah. change all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I also read it somewhere that basically the age of homework is changing. Maybe it's mm-hmm. not over, but it's definitely changing. And most of the normal homework people can now do with ChatGPT and co.
Yeah.
But then what I think it was also Ethan Molnick or someone else who said basically, yeah, he's still using it, but you have to raise the bar, basically. So saying, here you have a survey because you can Google it. You can say, create me a satisfaction survey for training and now challenge it.
Mm-hmm,
and,
exactly.
And, what's good about it? What's bad about it? What? How to make it better? How to make it impactful? Where are the gaps in here? And so on. Basically raise the bar like two layers, because this basic layer can be done with the tool alone without any knowledge, most probably. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because cool. in, say, the old way, I would say, here's theory and apply this yeah. theory to a situation that we have. And now they will probably go to chat or Copilot yeah. and make a survey. And then I would say, well, now let's add theory yeah. and see how can you make it more impactful. Yeah. Or what if we change the prompts,
yeah.
including
yeah.
theory, and
yeah.
see what we get then.
Yeah, yeah. exactly. Like, yeah, yeah. Include Patrick, Kirkpatrick, level 3, how would you do this, something.
Exactly,
like probably,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very nice. And the last question I would have is, I already heard book recommendations before, but do you have an explicit book recommendation related to the topic or anything important that you would have the
yeah,
people read?
I would think as far as books, I would say definitely Donald Clark. He's yeah. critical. He is he's both in learning and technology,
yeah.
very critical in a positive way. And I like that.
Very good. And with this, I would say thank you very much for joining the Learning Explorer podcast and that you have been my guest and shared your experience.
Well, and thank you for having me.
And with this, I would say we hear each other next time in the Learning Explorer podcast.